Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts, back on the air, and thanks for sharing your Sunday with me. Hey, today we're going to talk about ELF, and I told you last week that we were going to be doing that this week. We're going to also be talking about some hate group statistics that are going to absolutely floor you. Then we're going to be talking about lone wolves also, because I keep getting these inquiries about, you know, exactly what a lone wolf is, or a little bit more on lone wolves. So I want to give you some information on that, because I think that's important, because that is, to me, the biggest issue that we have with this issue of domestic terrorism in this country. But before we get into that, I got to do a shout out. I haven't done any shout outs yet. I have to shout out to the people in North Carolina and South Carolina who just went through this storm and that are actually currently still going through the storm. I got to tell you, we just got back. We were actually in South Carolina for 2 weeks, and we have a home out there. We have a lot of relatives and friends between North Carolina, South Carolina. And obviously, we've been checking on them every day, checking the storm, checking the weather. So at any rate, I just wanted to do a shout out to them and tell them we're all thinking about them, and that our prayers are with them, and stay safe. All right. I have another shout out. This one has to do with a heavy metal band. Now, look, I will be the first to tell you I'm not into heavy metal. But this is one that actually my agent sent me. That she mentioned to me. And the name of the heavy metal group is called Five Finger Death Punch. I have no idea where the name comes from, but that's who they are. They donated a portion of their recent concert, the proceeds, to help support the Thin Blue Line. Now, as you know, I'm a former law enforcement guy. I always appreciate these kind of things, throwing a shout out to them, because they showed their support for law enforcement officers. They cut a $95,000 check to an organization that helps the families of fallen law enforcement officers. And they noted that, you know, every 58 hours, for those of you who don't know it, it's a statistic again. Police officers who believe in something and sacrifices everything and dies in the line of duty. So every 58 hours, a police officer who believes in something sacrifices everything and dies in the line of duty. And see, you don't hear about that as much on the news. But it is a serious situation. Now, they said that they're making this donation as a token of their respect and gratitude to those committed to protect and serve, and to those who sign up to bravely hold the thin blue line between civilization as we know it and lawless savagery and chaos. Finally, they mention how these men and women go to work every day and realize that they might not come home. And they sign up for that. And that's definitely respectable. Well, I can appreciate that. That's what I did for so many years. And I have to tell you, it's true. I mean, a lot of these police officers, they put themselves on the line here in harm's way. And unfortunately, sometimes there's some bad press based upon some bad decisions. I'm not going to get into all of these different things that do happen out there. And I think when they do make mistakes, I think like anybody else, they've got to stand up for their mistakes. And, you know, because they're not above the law either. So I want to make that very clear. But there's so many of them out there that are really trying hard to make the public safe for everybody. It doesn't matter about your nationality, your ethnic background, your color, your religion, nothing. Sexual orientation. It's all of it. And unfortunately, like I said, sometimes we get some bad publicity on that, but that's just the way that it is. Okay, let's get into the emails, because you know how I always like to discuss emails before I get into the show as well, to show my appreciation for those. I don't do all the emails, obviously, because sometimes there's too many of them. And sometimes, you know, based upon what they say, some of it's things that I really don't want to put on the air. And not necessarily condemning anything that I'm doing or saying, but sometimes I think they're people are just a little bit too over the top. And I try to avoid the political nonsense that's going on out there. And I try to maintain at least a neutral attitude, although sometimes I can't avoid, you know, the politics of it. in terms of some of the subject matters we're discussing. But at any rate, here's the first one. Jim, last week you spoke about ALF and their history and ideologies. Are the ideologies of ALF and PETA the same? Is PETA a part of ALF? And this is from Michelle from Oklahoma. Well, I'll talk about that because what I did, as I mentioned last week, just for those of you that maybe didn't tune in last week or catch one of the archive shows, ALF means the Animal Liberation Front. And if you want to learn more about that, obviously you can go online. If you want to learn what I discussed last week, you can always go to the archives. And before I forget, and as usual, anybody that wants to call in and has any comments or questions, please feel free to do so at 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. Or you could do with some of these individuals, do with their emails, listen up with jp@pottsandassociates.com. Okay? All right. Now, let's look at the second email real quick, and then I'm going to get into this business to answering Michelle's question as well. It says, Dr. Potts, do you ever speak to business groups? Thomas, yes, I do. As a matter of fact, this past week I actually spoke in front of a very large chamber of commerce. I enjoy doing things like that. I have spoken in front of political groups, political associations. I've spoken at schools, different places, and I really do enjoy doing that. So, yes, I absolutely I've spoken at conventions on the subject matter as well. So, yes, I do. And, by the way, I don't charge to speak on this in front of these groups, et cetera. So, if anybody wants to contact me in terms of, you know, being a speaker at one of their events, I have absolutely no problem with that at all. All right. Okay. Having said that, now let's take a look at this business that Michelle asked about regarding PETA and ALF from last week. First of all, I know everybody is probably out there that's probably familiar with PETA, P-E-T-A. Let's take a look at exactly what that means. PETA actually means People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. That's where it comes from. And it's actually an American animal rights organization that's based out of Norfolk, Virginia. Now, you remember with ALF started actually overseas. All right. Now, this particular organization, PETA, is led by a lady by the name of Ingrid Newkirk. And she's now the international president for PETA. Now, just to let you know, they actually are a little bit different than ALF because they actually have 400 employees. And it claims that it has 6.5 million members and supporters, in addition to claiming that it is the largest animal rights group in the world. Its slogan is, animals are not ours to eat, wear, experiment on, use for entertainment, or abuse in any other way. And their mission statement, I thought, was important for you to hear. And their mission statement is, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is the largest animal rights organization in the world. PETA focuses its attention on the four areas in which the largest numbers of animals suffer the most intensely for the longest periods of time. And they specifically name in the food industry, in the clothing trade, in laboratories, and the entertainment industry. And they also indicate that they work on a variety of other issues, including the cruel killings of rodents, birds, and other animals who are often considered pests, as well as cruelty to domesticated animals. Well, that's their mission statement. Now, they were founded actually, you know, I don't know if you know how old that organization is, but they were actually founded in 1980. And it was by Ms. Newkirk, who I just mentioned to you, and another animal rights activist called Alex Pacheco. So they are basically, it appears to be American-based. So it is an American company, although they have actually branched out internationally now. So, more directly, when you ask me, Michelle, are they a part of ALF? The answer is no, they are not a part of ALF. So PETA is definitely different. Now, let me just share with you what their position is on the Animal Liberation Front, or ALF, as I've mentioned, because they do have a position statement out. It said, throughout history, some people have felt the need to break the law in order to fight injustice. The Underground Railroad and the French Resistance are both examples of people breaking the law in order to combat injustice. PETA is a legal activist organization But we realized that other groups had different methods, and we try not to condemn any efforts in behalf of animals in which no one is harmed. The ALF, which is simply the name adopted by people acting illegally in behalf of animal rights, and I'm reading there, so don't send me any hate mail. I'm just telling you what they say. All right. Breaks inanimate objects such as stereotactic devices and decapitators in order to save lives. It burns empty buildings in which animals are tortured and killed. ALF raids have provided proof of horrific cruelty that would not have been discovered or believed otherwise. Now, they also go on to say that they have resulted in officials filing of criminal charges against laboratories, deciding experimenters for violations of the Animal Welfare Act, and in some cases, the shutting down of abusive labs for good. Often, ALF raids have been followed by widespread scientific condemnation of the practices occurring in the targeted labs. Now, they go on to say anyone could be an activist. It does not take any special skills or superhuman abilities. You just need to care enough about animals to want to protect them. Okay, so there it is, Michelle. I think I've answered your question, and I've given probably a little bit more detail, but I think it's important for people to understand the difference between Peter and ALF as well. Okay, now we're going to move on. I told you last week we were going to talk about ELF, E-L-F, and I'm not talking about Santa's helpers, all right? ELF means the Earth Liberation Front, and they are also known as elves and the elves, and it's a collective name for autonomous individuals or covert cells who, according to the ELF press office, use economic sabotage and guerrilla warfare to stop the exploitation and destruction of the environment. Now, some of you may have remembered when SUVs were really very, very popular. Well, they're still popular, but when they first came out, it was a big deal. ELF was very active with burning SUVs. I don't know if some of you remember that. It was a number of years ago now. But ELF was actually founded. Now, here we go again. As you know, as I told you last week, ELF was founded overseas. Well, the ELF, as they call it, was founded in Brighton in the United Kingdom in 1992. So technically, the organization is not that old. I mean, 1992 is just right around the corner. And then it spread to the rest of Europe by 1994. And it's now an international organization with actions reported in 17 countries and is widely regarded as descending from Animal Liberation Front because of the relationship and cooperation between the two movements. Now, that's what ALF says. Now, that's interesting because what we just said about Peter was a little bit different. But the ELF, as you can see, they're associating themselves in a manner of speaking with ALF. Because sympathizers say that it's an eco-defense group dedicated to taking the profit motive out of environmental destruction by causing economic damage to businesses through the use of property damage is how they act. Now, they do feel that those two movements are kind of moving together. And ELF and ALF use the same leaderless resistance model. It's similar. So if you recall from last week, what did I tell you? They don't really have leaders per se. Now, the ELF was classified as the top domestic terror threat in the United States by the Federal Bureau of Investigation at one point. And the reason for that is the amount of destruction, which I will get into in a little bit as well. And its members are actually classified as eco-terrorists. Eco-terrorists. So there's another thought for you in terms of terrorism. Eco-terrorists. Now, just because on the lack of deaths from ELF attacks, the FBI's Deputy Assistant Director for Counterterrorism has said, I think we're lucky. Once you set one of these fires, they can go away. They can go way out of control. And those are the situations where we have to be careful, especially in California, because as you know, we are prone to these fires out here. Now, I want to take a moment and give you the structure of ALF. I'm sorry, ELF. Now, let me get my two mixed up, ALF and ELF. Now, ELF monkey wrenching is carried out against facilities and companies involved in, here we go, logging. Doesn't that make sense? What are they doing? They're cutting down trees. Genetic engineering, GMO crops, deforestation, sport utility vehicle sales, urban sprawl, rural cluster, and developments with larger homes, energy production and distribution, and a wide variety of other activities are all charged by the elf with exploiting the earth and its environmental and inhabitants. Look, there's a lot of land out there. You know, my wife and I, when we travel sometimes, we see how much land is really out there. But you do see all of these developments that are going up now. It is amazing. I don't know if that's the result of the economy or not, but I say that, you know, you see these all over the place. And we travel East Coast, West Coast, you know, and sometimes in between. And we see these huge developments go up. But I don't know. People need a place to live. So what do we do? I mean, we're a world that's growing in terms of its population. They have to live somewhere. So I don't necessarily, you know, agree with their philosophy, at least with the developments. We have to have them. Now, ELF has no formal leadership, hierarchy, membership, or official spokesperson, and it's entirely decentralized. Instead of consisting of individuals or cells who choose the term as a banner to use, individuals are commonly known to work in affinity groups known as cells and are usually self-funded. Good. I'm glad that that's one thing the government's not paying for. Techniques involve destruction of property by using tools to disable or the use of arson to destroy what activists believe is being used to injure animals, people, or the environment. You know, I don't know. You know, people with their obsessions. Now, I'm not saying that we don't need to protect the environment. We hear a lot about the environment. I get it. There's people that are going to be born after us, and they need a safe place. I don't disagree with that at all. But I think that when you start using tactics that hurt people, that to me is going to be problematic. I don't think that that's necessarily a way to go. Now, I know that there's a lot about global warming. You could argue that why can't we go, you know, to the, the Congress, you know, the Senate, whoever, and talk about these things. And I know that there's organizations out there that do fight legitimately, towards these issues. And I think that's why we have, you know, the national forests and things of that nature where the government has actually said, don't touch these lands type of thing. So it's not like we're not doing anything. So, you know, to me, extremism in any sense of the word is always bad. Now, I will tell you that their basic philosophy is that they are a diverse group of individuals with a variety of different ideologies and theories. And that's going to include animal liberationists, anti-capitalists, green anarchists, deep ecologists, eco-feminists, and anti-global isolationists, if you're ready for that one. Now, they argue that direct action is required in order to aid the Earth liberation movement. And it's also, by the way, I don't know if you've ever heard of this terminology, but it's also known as the eco-resistance movement and a part of the radical environmental movement. And they claim that it would be similar to how ALF has projected forward their liberation movement. So there was an intent apparently on their part to act in the same way as ALF to help out with legal campaigns, Earth liberationists, and they would aid above ground environmental organizations, notably Earth First. So there's organizations out there that are trying to do it legitimately. And I'm going to be in favor of that, obviously, because all this other business is just entirely too much when people start burning. If it got to the point where the FBI had to actually put them on at the top of the list as a terrorist group, what does that tell you? Now, just to give you an idea about what we're talking about and why the FBI did what they did, I'm not going to get into a lot of these different events that ELF has done, but I will give you the first major report that when they did some serious damage was in October of 1998. So just to give you a flavor of the type of damage, and they were called Earth Liberation Army, claimed to be responsible for causing $12 million in damage to Vail Ski Resort by setting fire to several buildings and four chairlifts, etc. That's $12 million worth of damage. Hey, I don't know if you've ever been to Vail. We went to Vail a couple of years ago. Great place. Had a great time. But anyway, not to digress. But $12 million in damage. Why? They don't like the skis. They don't like the ski lifting. Because what are they also doing? They're probably, you know, cutting the ski pass. So that means they're taking down timber. So for them, it's a big deal about the ski lift and the ski lift area as well for skiing. So that gives you a rough idea about the about ELF. So if you have any questions, you want to call in about it, 818-602-4929. Or you can email listenupwithjp, pottsandassociates.com. Hope I don't sound like a broken record on that, but somebody told me, can I repeat it a couple of times? So I do try to do that so we can get some people calling in. Okay, now, this next segment that I want to talk about, it has to do with statistics on hate groups. Now, look, hate groups in this country, I'm just telling you, it's out of control. It's out of control. Now, let's just clarify what is a hate group. Because you may know it generally speaking, but let me give you actually what the textbook definition is. All hate groups have beliefs or practices that attack or malign an entire class of people, typically for their characteristics, you know, things that they can't change about them, about themselves. Now, their activities include criminal acts, marches, rallies, speeches, meetings, publishing, even handing out leaflets, donating, paying membership dues, participating in activities such as meetings and rallies. And there are individual chapters of a larger organization, and they're all counted separately. So I want you to understand that. So these hate groups that I'm going to tell you about, well, I'm not going to get into the list of all of them. I'm not going to get into that kind of list today, and I will in the future. But all of the splinter groups off of the main groups are all considered as hate groups also. But let me just tell you what a group is. Group as an entity, it has a process through which followers identify themselves as being a part of a group. And it could include, like I told you, people who donate, attend meetings, attend the marches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they are all part of the group, even whether or not they actually name themselves as that, they would be part of this group. Now, the FBI considers hate crimes by these organizations, by all these different hate groups, a criminal offense against a person or property, they say, that's motivated in whole or in part by an offender who's biased against a race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, ethnic background, gender, or gender identity. And, you know, you see that I put all of these different ones in there because it's hate groups. Now, you know, when Barack Obama was in the office, they say that some of these groups actually increased in number. And, you know, again, not to get into the politics of some of this, now we have a new administration. The numbers are probably pretty consistent from that standpoint. But I will tell you something. There are 954 hate groups in this country. 954, believe it or not. Now, some of these groups I know you've heard of, so I'm going to give you a rough, you know, category of some of them. But you have the Ku Klux Klan, you have the neo-Nazis, white nationalists, racist skinhead groups, black separatist groups, neo-Confederate groups, Christian identity groups. Then they have what they call general hate groups that are subdivided into anti-LGBT, anti-immigrant, Holocaust denial, racist music, if you're ready for that, and even traditionalist, Catholic, anti-Muslim. So these groups are out there, just to name a few of these. But, I mean, just think about that. Now, some of these don't surprise us. We've heard of the KKK. Come on, that goes back since the 1800s. We all know about that. They've been around for a long time. Now, the next thing I'm going to do is actually break it down for you by, I'm not going to go through all of the states, but as what I wanted to do is to give you the top number for each state in the top, I think I did 10 of them, 10 or 11, whatever it is, just to give you a rough idea by state where these main groups are. And again, I really think that this is going to somewhat surprise you, but maybe not. I don't know. The number one that has the most hate groups, can you guess? I'll give you a second. Can you guess? What do you think? Well, let's see if you're right. California. California, believe it or not, has 75 hate groups. 75. Second, it's tied. 66 in the following two states. Can you guess? Well, here it is. Texas and Florida. Believe it or not, Texas and Florida each have 66. The next one has 48. And I don't want to say that this kind of surprises me. Well, I guess it does somewhat surprise me in terms of this number. It's my home state of New York. 48 in New York. And I remember when I was growing up, it was a family in the neighborhood. I'm not going to be mentioning names or anything like that. But we found out some years later that the secretary for the Ku Klux Klan actually lived on the same block that we did. Had no idea. I found out years later from a law enforcement officer who lived there, who was actually my scoutmaster. And he confided in me years later after actually we had moved from this little town and told me that. So I thought that was interesting. But New York has 48. You know, you think about some of this being up north versus being in the south. A lot of times people think about the south, you know, versus the north. And I'm not here to create the Civil War all over again, okay? But 48, I thought that was a lot. At any rate, the next one down has 40, and that's Georgia. Georgia has 40 hate groups. Now, my birth state, which is Virginia, 38. 38. The next one was somewhat of a surprise. When I think about Tennessee, I don't think about hate groups coming out of Tennessee. I only think about, is that where the Kentucky, no, I was going to say, is that where the Kentucky Derby is? I think that's actually in Kentucky. But at any rate, Tennessee has 37. I'm thinking about those horses out of Tennessee called the Tennessee Walkers. They're supposed to be excellent horses, actually. The next one, here we go, heading back up north again, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has 36. Now, let me tell you something. 3 years ago, I think it was about 3 years ago, Pennsylvania was at the top. I think it was they were at 69. 3 years ago, California did not have 75. So I keep up with these statistics. I could have done that for you in terms of going back through, but I'm talking about currently what's going on now. But actually, Pennsylvania has dropped down to 36. Next, we have Michigan. Michigan has 29. I skipped one. Illinois has 34. Maryland, 25. And the state of Washington, 26. Now, that gives you the top, 10, whatever the number is, to give you a rough idea. Now, I'm not encouraging anybody to move out of those states. I'm just telling you what the statistics give us in terms of where these hate groups are. So those are the worst states, apparently, for hate groups. But now I know what you might be curious about. You might be curious in terms of, okay, those are the top 10, but do you have the states that are at the minimum? And I did that also. So I can tell you this. I didn't have any states that had zero. So let me just start with that. But New Mexico, they've only got one. One. Wyoming, one. I think that's what they call Big Sky. No, Montana's Big Sky Country, I think. Anyway, Wyoming, one. North Dakota, two. Believe it or not, in Washington, D.C., they've got two. Two. And Vermont has two. The rest of them all go up from there with a very, you know, with various numbers, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, 10. But these give you the minimum states. I used to crack a little joke about the ones about D.C. with the two, but I'll just let that go because I don't want to get political. So at any rate, that gives you a rough idea where we are with these numbers. Here's my concern. My concern is that there was an analysis that was done, and it's clear that hate groups in general are on the rise in the United States. This is the third year running that these numbers have gone up. So, just to give you a few statistics more, there were 233 chapters the previous year of the black nationalist hate groups, such as the Nation of Islam. So in 2017, as compared to 193 the previous year, the black nationalist hate organizations grew by 22%. Last year, neo-Nazi groups, which the year before had number 99, saw the largest increase, growing by 22% and reaching 121 groups across the country. Anti-government groups grew from 623 in 2000. Let's go back to 2016 a little bit, and they grew to 689. But here's one that somewhat surprised me, and this may surprise some of you. The KKK chapters actually declined drastically. They decreased by almost 130. They went down over the last few years. So I don't know why there's a change there. I don't have that information. But seeing that group go down is definitely a positive, because they are historically one of the groups that we all think about that goes back to right after the Civil War and Reconstruction. You know, a lot of people don't realize how the KKK got started, but you have to go back to after the Civil War during Reconstruction. And I'm giving you an overview here. I was an American history major and a black history minor in college. And it was during Reconstruction, right, you know, that the issue was, is that the Northerners, and this is what the argument is, okay? So I'm sure there's some people out there that would, you know, want to take this up as an issue to discuss it. I'm just giving you a slight overview. I'm not going, you know, down deep into this. But the way they got started was because the Northerners, you know, they had won, and they went into the South, and they started putting a lot of black politicians in power in some of the Southern states that were part of the Confederate states. And the rights of the whites down there felt that their rights were being tramped on. They were being pushed aside. So there was a lot of issues with that. So they started forming these groups, you know, in terms of wanting to fight back, et cetera. And that's how they started with these night rides and things of that nature. That's kind of how they got started. And I'm giving you a very rough on this. So don't be sending me all this mail, you know, emails talking about, you know, I'm just giving a slight overview on this, but that's basically how they got started. They basically started fighting back with what they thought their rights were, because their rights were being trampled on, which is interesting because from a black perspective, you know, in terms of, you know, what had happened to them. So now giving them a chance to, I don't want to say reverse, because it wasn't so much them as it was the Northern sympathizers that came down, and they were the ones that were actually doing this. It almost seemed like it was a punishment of sorts, in my opinion, from an historical perspective. But again, I'm not trying to redo and recreate Reconstruction or the Civil War. Because we were talking about the KKK, they are one of the oldest groups out there. I really just wanted to share that information with you. Okay, now let's move on to talking about this business of lone wolves. Lone wolves. Now, let me just tell you, if you want to call in, 818-602-4929. Listen Up with JP at PottsandAssociates.com if you, in fact, want to send me an email. But don't send me hate mail because I just delete those. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do that. Look, about this business about lone wolves. Lone wolves, United States officials, they've acknowledged that the attackers of the lone wolf and isolated cell organizational types are on the rise. And you've heard me mention that to you before, and those of you that have heard me actually speak have heard me say that as well. This situation with lone wolves, we can't control. We can't stop a guy necessarily unless he's out there doing something on the internet and they can pick up on it that way. But they now pose a greater threat than major coordinated actions. And if you think about it, how many major coordinated actions have we really had? Maybe, I don't know, three or four since 9/11 maybe, from these outside groups or at least the philosophies, the ideologies from these groups. But traditional intelligence methods, they use a top-down approach with an emphasis on signals intelligence. They're ill-equipped to identify and prevent terrorism using lone wolf tactics. They can't do it. It's too difficult. There was a shooting the other day in Southern California. And, here's an individual. He's a lone wolf. He's an active shooter, kills five people, including himself. It was a domestic violence situation. And you've heard me talk about domestic violence as well. It's another concern that we have out there. So the problem is, how do we do it? How do we work on assisting law enforcement with lone wolves? Well, there is a terminology that I'm going to share with you, and it's called crowdsourcing. Crowdsourcing. So I know you're going to say, okay, what's crowdsourcing? It's basically one in which individuals or organizations obtain goods and services. This is how it started out. All right. So it wasn't associated initially with terrorism and getting information. So the way that they started out with this issue, this terminology called crowdsourcing, is that services included ideas about finances and people being relatively open and often rapidly involving these groups together on internet users. So people were out there doing things with the internet, and they were basically communicating back and forth. So as what they picked up on was that this business called crowdsourcing is something now where they are depending on crowdsourcing as now a problem-solving technique. And it is basically a new idea, but it's shown great promise in tackling issues similar to the identification of lone wolf terrorists. At its core, crowdsourcing is a method for thousands or even millions of people to contribute their knowledge, expertise, or skills toward a unified task. And done correctly, I got to tell you, it can produce the results that are unachievable by traditional tasking of humans or computers. So what does that mean? This goes back, like I said, for some of you that have actually heard me speak, when I talk about law enforcement can't do it by themselves. They have to rely on the general public. Communication, giving information, back and forth, looking at things. It's not about racism. If you see something that's out of line and it needs attention, then that's what we need to do. And look, I'm not saying it's a fail-safe system, because I know that the situation in Florida, where there was this, another mass shooting, and the FBI had been notified in a different state, but not in the same state, because they had seen some things on the internet from the individual, and they didn't act quickly enough on it, and this person actually engaged in the behavior. So right away, people start saying, well, it doesn't work. It does work. And if we can cut down on some of this by a few of these events, then I think that would be fantastic. And that's what it's all about. We've got to start trying to eliminate some of this down. And law enforcement needs your help in order to do this. Now, I will tell you that even President Obama said that a lone wolf terror attack in the United States is more likely than a major coordinated effort like the September 11th attack. So they're aware of this. Going back to the former president, they're aware of this. Now, I will also tell you that according to former Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, remember her? She stated, we are also seeing a rise of activities by individuals who are actually in the country and they are acting by themselves, and that kind of attack is the most difficult to prevent because there's no way to intercept it. So that's why they need us. They need our assistance as citizens. Think about how many people live in this country. Start listening and looking. That's what we have to do. I think I told you last week about the Boston, in Boston, the captain of the police force in Boston that turned in his own son because of things his son was saying. I mean, I'm not telling you turn in your kids, but look, here's the deal. The deal is I would rather have, if I know my son is, one of my sons is getting ready to do something, I'd rather have them be stopped because ultimately they'll pay even a higher price and I wouldn't want that to happen to them. Find out what the issue is. How can we address it? What's going on? And sometimes parents don't do it. They don't do it. This technology, I had a friend of mine that used to complain to me, she can't get her son off the computer. He spends, you know, he spent so much time on that computer. If he's not eating, he's at the computer. Sometimes he's eating and he's at the computer. Hey, you know what you do? Maybe you shut the computer down or you take the computer away. What happened to the day when our parents used to tell us go outside and play? Now they've got computers, they don't want to go outside. I don't know. At any rate, look, let me just tell you, lone wolf and terrorism has emerged as a popular and effective tactic for terrorists attacking the United States. Even Al-Qaeda and some of those other groups now, what are they doing? ISIS is basically on the run. Al-Qaeda, I'm sure, is still out there somewhere. But those organizations are also gravitating toward that. Think about it. The Fort Hood shooting. He was a lone wolf, but what was the ideologies that he was spewing forth? So they are encouraging people, just watch the news, and you will see that that's what they're doing. Being able to slip an individual into the country that can actually do some kind of damage. Lone wolf. So they're even breaking up and doing it that way because on a larger scale, they know that they can't do as much anymore. So look, we got to eliminate the complex organizational framework that's inherent to a traditional terrorist group structure. It makes it easier for lone wolf terrorists to better avoid authorities, which is what I've been saying. And the effort to detect and prevent these violent acts. Now, you know, you got people seeking political change through violent acts is not a new phenomenon, by the way. It's not new. And with today's advances in science and vast amounts of information readily available to the masses through the internet, individuals or smaller groups have the ability to cause massive amounts of destruction, a feat once reserved for much larger entities. Now we have the internet. Thanks to Al Gore. No, I'm just kidding. Al Gore is the one that came out and said that he had something, I don't know, you know, that he had discovered the internet or something. I don't know. But look, the lone wolf presents particular challenges to us, you know, and also to the traditional U.S. intelligence community. Because a lone wolf operator engages in, at most, minimal communication with a terrorist group hierarchy. The traditional intelligence procedures of identifying key members of a group are less effective. And also, keep in mind that using electronic intercepts to expand the search methods using a top-down approach is much less likely to identify and prevent terrorists using lone wolf tactics. Now, you know, that means, look, we've got law enforcement people, and I was doing some of this as well. You know, it was called OSINT, which is the Open Source Intelligence Team, working on the internet, getting information. That's why when people put in certain names and things like that, some of that stuff can get traced back when you're searching for things. You need to be careful, by the way, on things sometimes when you're getting on the internet and you're putting certain keywords in and things of that nature. But at any rate, you know, so the Open Source Intelligence Team, you know, the job is to get in there and work the internet. See what keywords you pick up on and follow those and find out what they're talking about. Because I'm going to tell you, in today's internet age, a lone wolf's interactions usually take the form of reading internet forums or participating in or simply observing chat rooms dedicated to radical principles. Did you hear that? They listen in on chat rooms to see what people are talking about. You know, the internet technology they have changed. I mean, this has changed us moving forward. And these individuals will listen in. They will listen in. And they'll look at people who have embraced militant Islam or may eventually plan or want to carry out some kind of act of violence. And believe it or not, a lot of these guys, a lot of these kids, I'm sure you've heard this, have actually become radicalized over the internet. But that process is not a new system either. Because the Nation of Islam used to go into the prisons as well. That's right. Believe it or not, there's a lot of people in prison that are becoming radicalized. And they did that at one time. You could go back and watch some of those old movies during the 70s where the Nation of Islam would go into the prisons and these guys would be getting out sooner on parole. Why? Because now they found, you know, a religious belief. They're not the same person, but they become radicalized. And now they get out. But believe it or not, I can tell you, people get radicalized in prison as well. You know, so now, unless these individuals I'm talking about are already under investigation for unrelated reasons, look, there's a little chance traditional methods of intelligence are going to discover who these people are. So what do we have to do once again? I can't emphasize it enough. We've got to listen. We've got to look. We've got to be aware. I tell people in my seminars, your head needs to be on a swivel when you're out there in the general public. You need to listen. You know, if something seems suspicious, check it out. Now, look, I'm not telling you to turn into a cop. It's not what I'm telling you, because I want you to be careful also. But the realities are is that if you see something that looks really kind of suspicious, we need to take up this banner. You know, somebody asked me the other day why I'm doing what I'm doing with this show every week. Look, and some of you already know this. I'm doing this because I'm trying to get the word out. I'm trying to make people safer. I don't believe that our government is doing enough. And I'm not turning into a radical or anything like that. I'm just an information person. And that's why I keep trying to make as closely as possible a neutral attitude on this. But I'm hoping to be able to spread the word. You know, tell a friend of yours, listen in on Sundays at 3 o'clock. And then tell that person to listen in and get somebody else to listen in. We've got to make our country safer. And this is just a small step heading in that direction. And, you know, look, if you think about it, that's like this is a grassroots program. What are we doing? I'm getting the message to you. You're getting the message to the next person. That's how we do it. That's grassroots. Politicians use that to get elected sometimes. And no, I'm not running for office and I'm not intending to run for office. But this grassroots program that I'm just kind of talking about right now is a good way to get the message out. Keep talking to each other. Crowdsourcing is what I'm talking about with that, which is I've already mentioned. Because we can gather information on lone wolf terrorists, and we can then reverse the information flow to a positive as opposed to a negative. Look, I tell you something. I think this crowdsourcing has the potential to reduce the burden of information collection on the already overworked law enforcement. Bottom line, we can help them. They're overworked. And we can get the information. It can also provide us with buy-in to the problem of terrorism prevention by making them active participants and thereby produce higher quality and large amounts of intelligence than an unengaged community would. All right? So if you, in your own neighborhoods, we had a caller a few weeks ago, that talked about the fact that they have a community-based organization. This is what they did. Go to the community. Talk it up in the community. So everybody can be safe. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the guy that's breaking into your house. I'm talking much deeper than that. How many times have you seen on the news when there was a lone wolf situation and they turned around and they started interviewing the neighbors afterwards? And sometimes the neighbors said, well, I didn't know he was like that. You know, he was always quiet to himself, which is okay. I don't expect you, you know, to be knocking on doors and disturbing your neighbors and things of that nature. I don't expect that at all. But we've just got to pay attention because I'm going to tell you something. The major advantage lone wolves typically have is their inherent knowledge of local customs, practices, and operating environment of their targets and surrounding areas. Local knowledge gives them the ability to better choose targets for their vulnerability and importance, but also allows them to blend in and conceal their preparations from law enforcement personnel. That's why we need you. All right. Now, I can't beat this into the ground any further because I see my time is just about up. But, you know, I wouldn't mind talking more and more about this and about look up crowdsourcing. OK, start thinking in those directions, because there is so much that we could do to assist law enforcement. And maybe we can start cutting back on some of this if the citizens really jumped on board and started helping law enforcement. All right. Okay, you've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but let me remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Until then, please be aware, be vigilant, and be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.